Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. So welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Nick Haig, who is Director and Chairman of B2B International. Hi, Nick. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks, Adrian. Good to be speaking with you today.
Perfect. So, Nick, dulcet tones coming all the way from Manchester, I must say. So welcome to the podcast. But for the benefit of our listeners and readers, can you tell us a little bit about you and also about the work that you do?
Sure. Well, I'm director and chairman of B2B International. Started life as a geologist way back when.
Set up
B2B International, a father and son business 20 years ago. We saw a niche in the marketplace for a business to business specialist.
Right.
We were doing industrial research before that, more smokestack stuff. But we saw that B2B was wider than the industrial market research, and there wasn't really any specialists offering this service. So 20 years ago, we set up B2B International, a market research agency consultancy. Mm-hmm. And I suppose over that time, we've always – a big part of what we've done has been customer satisfaction research.
Okay.
And I suppose the two main strands were customer satisfaction and branding research.
Right.
But over the last 20 years, the world has changed tremendously. In fact, we were set up the same year as Google was set up, so that puts it into perspective.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how we deliver customer experience research, it's evolved. It started off being called customer satisfaction. Then Fred Reichhold came around and wrote his book, and people talked of loyalty and NPS. Mm-hmm. And now customer experience. And of course, it's all one of the same thing, but it has evolved in terms of how people have become more obsessed and more trying to deliver a greater experience and develop that culture to be more customer-centric within their organizations. So more and more the research we're doing is on customer experience, sometimes tied in with brand positioning and brand development, and always within a B2B context.
Perfect. Now, so the subject of the interview, I mean, there is a reason why we decided we were going to arrange time to talk, but because we actually have met before. We met at conferences. We were talking before this interview, and we couldn't quite remember kind of when it was and how long ago it was. I think it was probably between 2 and 3 years ago at some transformation conference or one or the other, and we did agree that they all seem to blend into each other, and time, as you get older, seems to go a bit faster. But actually what's happened over the last few months is that you've just published a book called B2B Customer Experience, A Practical Guide to Delivering Exceptional CX. And that's kind of really stood out for me because it's like, it's customer experience, but focused primarily on B2B. And I'm not sure I've actually seen many books that are specifically looking at B2B CX. So can you tell us a bit about the book, who's it for, the main thesis, and sort of how it came about?
Well, it came about actually because of these, conferences, events globally that I've been going to, and other colleagues of mine around the world, and always interested in the subject matter. So going to hear what others are talking about, but all the time it always seemed to be consumer B2C examples, and of course our mainstay is B2B, and mm-hmm. so we felt there was a massive hole in the marketplace for a book like this. So obviously with the 20 years experience in what we've done for our clients in, for B2B International, we felt we'd lean on that experience and put it down in paper as a guide.
Okay.
You know, so in terms of offering advice, you know, for that step-to-step journey of plan, mapping, structuring, how to implement and control customer experience. And we wrote it in mind. There's case studies. I carried out, you know, numerous interviews with clients within that to help to bring it to life in terms of case studies. So it's positioned for marketeers, customer experience managers, directors, insight managers, but even, you know, C-suite execs as well. From multinational corporates, maybe down to directors of SMEs, helping them to understand and be those practitioners of developing better customer experience.
Perfect. So, I mean, so what I did is I took a look at the book and I pulled together some questions that I thought would give people who are listening in and are reading the highlights a bit of a flavor of the book.
Yeah.
But I guess, before we kind of get into that, I mean, or the first question I want to ask was, so what's the key differences between business to business and business to consumer kind of CX? But also, I also wanted to ask you to reflect on kind of what's this, I mean, a lot of people talk about business to consumer, but and we don't, business to business as an area, it seems this big thing, but nobody, we don't resize it, and it feels like it's a big shadow that lurks in the background sometimes.
Yeah,
because business to consumer just dominates the news and the commentary that gets talked about. So could you give us a bit of an idea of what you think the size of the opportunity is relative to business to consumer, and also what do you think are the key differences between business to consumer and business to business customer experience?
Well, I'll start by answering the first question, Adrian, in that, you know, the size of the marketplace. And actually, the size of the marketplace for, if we're thinking of B2B customer experience, it's huge. It really is huge. You know, we think of the number of companies out there. For example, it depends. B2B is obviously SME, mid-market, and, you know, multinational corporates.
Sure.
But SMEs are the economic engine of most markets. In fact, in the UK, you know, for example, half of all jobs in the UK are and account for half of our GDP. So, so it's huge for customer experience. I think in terms of market, so I don't know the number on that. I do know the figure in terms of a market research,
okay,
which is where we start before we start to implement any customer experience initiative. And I know that's the global market for market research is estimated to be around $44 billion. And the B2B segment in which we play is around and about 10% of that. So, you know, It's a smaller part of the market research industry, but it's still a $4 billion market,
right,
globally. And I think, you know, then if you look at customer experience within that, that's bigger. So it's big business. But in terms of the key differences between B2C and B2B, there's similarities, of course. You know, we're looking to deliver against customer needs. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they will walk and go elsewhere with the business. I think the main difference is that as consumers of everyday products, it is easy for us to take our business elsewhere if we're not satisfied. Mm-hmm. And therefore, there's this huge incentive for you know, the B2C companies to try hard and deliver that very best customer service.
Yeah.
And in general, you know, they do. Otherwise, you know, economics will provide you know, the fact that if they don't improve, they'll go out of business.
Sure.
So, you know, you're looking to deliver against expectations, and I think this is the problem in B2B markets. You know, it's about meeting expectations, and we've set the bar so low, and you know, so experiences are just blur in terms of sitting in the neutral zone. You know, how often are you really wowed in a B2B context?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we set, we're used to Amazon, aren't we, and next day deliveries and even same day deliveries these days. And
sure.
But in a B2B environment, sometimes you're waiting 3 weeks for deliveries.
Yeah.
And, you know, if some sales rep is out of the office traveling on the road, you know, they put their out of office notification on and, you know, well, we'll get back to you when we can. You know, there's not that there's someone there to speak to you all the time. So I think often B2B suppliers are in this privileged position, if you like, that, you know, they don't need to deliver against that. Sometimes I think, first of all, there's this decision-making unit as well in a B2B environment as opposed to an individual in a B2C environment. So it's not always easy to switch because you might need to get buy-in or sign off from others. Obviously, procurement are involved in that. There might be a contract in place for a year or a number of years. And so this people become blasé in terms of delivering against that experience. So contracts aren't changed and people start to think that they have these loyal customer bases when actually it's due to them being hostage.
Right.
And it's this spiral of silence we talk about where, you know, the fact that they might not be delivering against expectations, but they might not be big enough things to feed back and complain about. But when that contract comes up for renewal, then, you know, they will look elsewhere.
Is it also because they're not actually feeling the pressure? And therefore, they just, it's like they relax, as you say, relax into complacency. And therefore, and so some people don't move unless they're pressured to move. And maybe there's, I guess my next question was also going to like, but are people just cluing up or cluing into this, that this actually might be an area where we can differentiate ourselves? And so you get the leading players that are starting to, oh, we can do this and we can make ourselves stand out by doing this. So I guess, is there a lack of pressure on the market right now, and that's why they're not necessarily focusing on it?
I think there is.
Okay.
Yeah, I think there is a lack of pressure, and I think it comes back to the fact that, I mean, we deal with large corporates, and this decision-making unit, you know, and often signed off from the top of the company, they're so far removed from the customer anyway that they're not quite sure what's happening in terms of so. There's no pressure or nothing being fed through the company back up the organization to say this customer isn't happy, you know, it's only looking at the financials. So that a lot of it's to do with communication, but I think to your point in terms of are they clued into the importance of customer experience, I think they all know the importance of customer engagement. I mean, at the end of the day, what's a company without their customers? But you know, traditionally, they've had the sales forces making these personal visits, developing close relationships, ensuring that they're satisfied. And so you'd think from this side of things, they've always been customer centric. But I think it's these days it isn't, and it's I think more and more it's about getting the buy-in from the top down, and so getting these people on board. And too often, it's sometimes customer experience is seen as fluffy stuff.
Right.
You know, what's the actual ROI on this? That's often, you know, the questions that are fired back in terms of this is big investment stuff.
Right.
What's it going to deliver? And these boards of companies often run by finance or with an accountancy background. And in a corporate sense, often with shareholders looking over their shoulders at the quarterly results, investment doesn't always seem to deliver those hard returns quick enough, like a new machine or warehouse or you know, investing in some technology might deliver. So I think that's where we need to. They are waking up. They're definitely waking up to it, and there's lots of noise out there. But it's where when we can go out there, speak to the marketplace, get feedback from customers, feed that back to boards of companies, not just in terms of their what they're saying, but tying that back to lots of internal data to show how much these customers have spent in the last year, 2 years. And when you start to bring that together and show what revenue might be at risk, that's when you get the attention of boards of companies. So a long way of answering your question there, Adrian, but I think they are clued in, they are waking up, but it's a slow process, and it's actually a process where we, you know, there needs to be lots of evidence in order to get that buy-in.
Yeah, and I think it's, I mean, you alluded to something at the beginning of your answer there, where you talked about it's a more multi-dimensional relationship as well. So you have multiple buyers, but then multiple buyers, but also multiple providers in many ways, the different people that are involved in providing kind of things, and then also potentially multiple different customers, in inverted commas. So there's like a buyer, there's somebody that might be that's actually signing the check, as it were, or somebody that might be in legal figuring out the contract and the SLAs and all those different sort of things, and then there's a person that might be actually using the thing or installing it or managing it or whatever it might be. And I guess there's this multi-tiered, multi-dimensional stakeholder sort of map, and I guess that just adds complexity to it all, particularly if you're looking at a larger organization. So it's almost, it feels like a bigger rock to move.
It does, and I think that's where in terms of the market research, the going out there and gathering the customer feedback, it needs to come from a multitude of different right. people, and then it's our job to piece that together, to synthesize that together, to say this is what's happening, and this is where, you know. So it's not just about touch points in delivery, it's about also those internal communications and those internal human to human relationships that we need to gather as well.
So do you think in your travels and your research, I mean, are there some sectors that are more clued up than others? I mean, I can probably guess of which what they might be, and are there ones that are obviously just need to do a lot of catching up, and so I mean, I guess because if the people are listening into this, they might go, right, well, okay, fine, that sounds if it's applicable to me. Now, if I need to go and find some people to watch or to learn from, exemplars, as it were, then which sectors do you think they should be sort of looking at in terms of these are the ones that are leading the pack?
This is a very frequently asked question, Adrian, because over the 20 years of doing this research, then you'd think, wouldn't you, that there'd be trends coming out of particular sectors.
Right.
I think the truth is that there's very good and there's very bad in all sectors.
Okay.
And I'm not sure whether there's a particular sector even. I mean, what I would say is that there's always, you know, in that value chain, in that supply chain, we're at the talking B2B, but there's always there's always a consumer at the end of it.
Yes.
So that B2B2C supply chain, and I do think that the sectors that are more clued in, as you say, are those sectors where they're more closely aligned or closer to a consumer marketplace. So it's not as convoluted, that whole
right.
value chain.
Yeah.
Because they're influenced by some part of their organization, that is looking to market and deliver a fabulous customer service and customer experience to that end consumer.
Right.
So I really wouldn't be able to say any particular sector. Maybe because of how things have evolved over the years, then you might say that the tech sector or the ICT sector,
yeah,
aligned with telecoms maybe. But again, I think this is because it's so closely linked with consumers and B2B sectors. They've used technology more quickly to start to engineer a better experience for their customers, but it's definitely not a sector thing, and I think it's often to do with, and you know, we talk about it a lot in terms of that top down influence, and it just depends on your CEO. I've got some very smokestack clients that the CEO, they realize that's the differentiator in terms of developing a customer experience, and you know, so they've started on that journey and delivering something very different to what the competitors are.
So digging into it a little bit more, I mean, it's like, so, I mean, when it comes to, a lot of people might be thinking about going, oh, okay, we need to do more on this, I need to take a closer look on it. I mean, is the process different? I mean, is it all about sort of listening and understanding first and that before you actually kind of do things? Because actually, I remember as things have developed, there was a lot of people that just went off and did stuff and then kind of people made mistakes and then people said, actually, no, you need to probably listen and understand first. So, yeah. I mean, is the process the same? You know, it's just a different context?
It most certainly is the same. I mean, I've had lots of experiences where clients have come to us and they've definitely put the cart before the horse.
Right.
You know, it might be for an ad hoc project where they're looking to – one particular example springs to mind where it was for a hire company, industrial equipment hire company, and they realized they wanted to get more of their customers to stay loyal and spend more with them. So they created a loyalty program, and they felt like they wanted to add value and do something differently. And they sunk $1 million. This was a UK company that just operating in the UK. They sunk £1 million sterling into creating this loyalty scheme. And they came to us and they said, we need your help, Nick. We need to understand why customers aren't signing up for this in the first instance. And they had 35 customers signed up for this program. They'd put you know, radio programs out there. They'd brought the suppliers on board that were offering to look to offer different services within this loyalty scheme. And they'd just not got it. You know, they'd not gone and spoken to their customers initially and said, what are you looking for from us? How well are we doing? And what can we do differently for you in the future? And that is the starting process. So it is very much the same B2B or B2C in that it's the first step is getting the voice of the customer, understanding who they are, what, you know, are the different needs out there, are the different segments and therefore different propositions that we need to develop. Also from that, then feeding that back into whether it's product service development, you know, doing things differently, different go-to-market model. Mm-hmm. But the first step is the listening, and then it's about, you know, understanding what that means, mapping it, changing things, improving, and then more importantly, you know, keeping on top of that and control measures are you using, because you can't manage what you don't measure. So that first stage is definitely the listening.
And do those sort of insights apply to both big companies and small companies? Is there a lesson kind of here for, you know, people that are in a business to business space, regardless of their size or which sector, is that actually people's experience in a consumer market is starting to impact their perceptions of what they get in a business-to-business market. And actually, the lesson is you need to be paying more attention to your customers and listening and thinking about that and thinking about kind of what that means for your business. I mean, is that the bigger lesson kind of here?
What is definitely clear, and we see this in all the customer feedback that we gather for our clients, is the larger the B2B company, and again, typically these are the companies that come to B2B International for help, the worse its performance is in delivering excellent customer experience. And I think it comes back to the fact that, you know, smaller B2B companies, you know, if you take it to the Soho, the small office, home office environment, which is less than 9 employees, then that boss is the tea person, the bookkeeper, the principal salesperson, and the buyer. And so, like a market trader, they're at the coalface, they're getting the feedback from the customers, they have the finger on the pulse, and they know what customers want, and they can change it quickly. Whereas as companies do get bigger, then and typically we'd see this tipping point at around and about when companies get to around 50 employees, then obviously departments and processes and functions start to be formed within the business. And so they start to get a bit more distanced from their customers, or at least those key decision makers do. And that's where things start falling over, or things start getting, they might need more of an independent or an external person to go out there and understand what it is that's looking for it.
You know, it's fascinating you say that, because I have a client that's in that sort of size space.
Yeah.
And interestingly, they're at that, they've got, you know, multiple offices, but they're a specialized consulting firm, and they've probably got 4 or 5 offices, but they're about the 70, 80 personnel sort of size right now. And one of the things they've asked me to do is, can you go out and talk to a bunch of our customers and have a really honest conversation with them, just as a way of gathering that insight?
Yeah.
But to do it in a very non-biased
way.
Non-biased and a sort of a non-structured way. It's like, we don't want to send them a survey. We want to go and actually have somebody who's knowledgeable to go and actually have a conversation with them, and is going to know what to ask. Well, one, knows our business intimately, but also two, can have an objective conversation with them. And it's funny because it is that tipping point. It feels around that sort of 50, 60, 70 people, is that it does feel like it gets a little bit, this is starting to feel a bit more transactional.
Yeah, we need to start doing something differently here. It's the old model doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, it's kind of a little bit too stretched. We need to get reconnected. Because we feel like we're getting too far away from our people, and us therefore too far away from our customers as well. And we need to connect the dots a little bit more. So it's an interesting point that.
I think what we do see, Adrian, is the those larger corporates and bigger B2B companies, what they are good at, they're very good at processes.
Yeah.
They know how to manufacture things. They know how to shave through Six Sigma and quality control. They can shave a cent off here, a penny off there.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to this emotions piece, then it's about who's at the coalface. So it's all just left to the sales staff.
And
it might be, the fact that customer services or something. But I think that's the problem, that these silos start to, and this was the theme that came through from every interview I did that fed into the book.
Yeah.
That, we're a siloed mentality. We have departments, and that's efficient in terms of, the way that we do it, whether it's credit control, whether it's procurement, whether it's customer services or supply chain. But actually, when there's a problem and the customer doesn't care, whose problem it is, but it's this passing the buck and how these departments speak to one another to sort things out, and how we can break down these silos to improve communication from department to department and job function to job function.
Mm. So I think it's fascinating. But I guess here's my question, Nick: is in your travels, in your research, in your interviews? Because this is kind of, I'm consciously feeling like going, yeah, you need to pull your socks up. This is all a bit, must work harder. The report card is not great. Mm. But I'm sure there's some examples out there of companies that are just doing some different kind of cool things that you've come across. Do you have a couple of examples that you could share with us that, about B2B companies that are getting it right, kind of what they're doing and what we can learn from that? So then people can actually listen to that and go, can I replicate that sort of thing in my business and to get me going, as it were?
Well, the best example, a B2B company, but you also might know them as a B2C company too.
Okay.
But we've gone to the Customer Experience Awards. We've been finalists with what we've done for them, and we've been working with this company now for nearly 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that in itself is a story, and that, this thing isn't a quick, this customer experience, delivering a customer experience, creating a culture of that customer centricity, it's not a thing you can do overnight.
Sure.
And it does take time, and that's why it does often need buy-in from the top. But the example is Molson Coors. So Molson Coors, brewing company. Molson is the Canadian arm, Coors is the US part of the business.
Sure.
And they came to us 8 years ago, actually just out of the UK.
Right.
And it was a particular small division within the UK for their independent business. So speaking and delivering to the independent outlets such as, the Dog and Duck on the corner, but also local golf clubs, conservative and working men's clubs, restaurants, hotels, those people that could choose which alcohol they bought from them. And we started speaking to their customers, and we started to, well, the first initial deep dive, we went out, we spoke to the customers, we came, fed this back. It started with journey mapping, understanding those touch points, but we fed back what the end-to-end picture looked like, where they were failing, and then we started to develop a program on the back of that. And after probably only a year and a half, the wider organization started to look at this small division and say, hold on a minute, why is this particular part of our operation so profitable?
Right.
And up against the likes of Heineken and Carlsberg, they were using customer experience as a differentiator. They've all got very powerful brands, yeah, lots of different brands within their portfolio, but they were also using customer experience as a differentiator. And from there, you know, from small seeds and acorns do large trees grow. And we're now working with them, you know, over in North America, mm-hmm, in Central Europe. And from what started with, it started within a marketing initiative, and they now have over 40 customer experience managers in the different countries around the world, you know, focusing on this and delivering something different. And so I think how they've done that, well, they did get the top-down buy-in very quickly, but it was about making sure that they showed that it was delivering to the bottom line, and then keeping it fresh with these customer experience managers and some of those initiatives, you know, keeping the communication going internally, externally, doing things different, but all the time listening to the customer and evolving as it went.
Right. I mean, it also kind of seems to be that the lesson there as well, I mean, and it applies to small companies as well as large companies, is that if you're going to start small, experiment, be a bit more agile in your approach, start small, experiment, learn, and then make what you're doing really good, and then scale from there, rather than just kind of doing a big kind of almost like one shot deal in many ways.
Yeah, it's like boiling the ocean otherwise, isn't it? It's completely. You know, there's so many different ways or different areas that can work upon. And I think that is often the first recommendation when we're talking about, you know, how to get buy-in, but how to start to get traction in an organization.
Yeah.
You get the intelligence, you speak to the customers, you got that first of all, you understand where you're doing well, where you may be failing, and you look at where you can get those easy quick wins and you start to make a difference.
Yeah.
And then from there you start to build, and the story then builds because, you know, it's got some substance behind it. People can start to see some change.
Yeah.
And people buy into it because, you know, we're talking about customers a lot here, but very much, and again, this is where I think the best organizations that we work with, you know, you're starting to tie that employee engagement with your customer feedback, and it's no surprise that there's a correlation between highly engaged employees. It starts with them first. They've got to be bought into the whole process, to deliver that excellent customer experience.
I mean, so you talked about the this idea of quick wins and stuff, and I know that, you know, there might be some people that are listening to this and they're looking for clues, the kind of the signposts, as it were, that going, tell me where to look. So in your experience and you know, taking this sort of approach and helping people sort of figure out where to start and things, I mean, what have you learned in terms of where are some of the obvious places where people can look first for quick wins? Is it, you know, well, I'm not going to second guess it, but, you know, do you have some guidance that you could offer our listeners and readers about where they should be looking for quick wins in order to gain some traction and to generate some momentum in this sort of process?
Well, I mean, it depends on the sector, but, you know, I think in terms of if we're taking a typical end-to-end journey of a typical B2B customer,
sure,
then I'd probably, you first of all, you want to look at your onboarding of your new customers, because they're very different on how, you know, first impressions last.
Sure.
So making sure that you understand that new business and how we start to deal with them. In the general day-to-day doings of business, then you know, that there's some typical touch points that you'd be looking at, and that might be on delivery.
Yes.
You know, in terms of you know, are you delivering on time in full every time? And so definitely looking at that delivery touch point. You know, quite often there's credit control in there or invoicing. You know, how clear, how accurate is all that? Is it on time? So having a look at maybe that particular touch point. And then, you know, and this is where statistical work of what we can do is looking at it, because it might be that you might be doing particularly well in a particular touch point, and that's where you know, we've talked a bit about it, that human to human element, but account managers and salespeople, and that's you know, that's where Molson Coors started to see they were the biggest driver of an impact on customer loyalty was the people factor and their account managers. And so looking at that and then, you know, starting to maybe place emphasis on some of those good areas which are impacting on your NPS, if you're measuring that as a key metric, as opposed to starting to look at where you might be failing and what's the key pain points for detractors.
And so, I mean, it seems to me, Nick, as well, is that this feels a bit like, in sort of old money terms, it's like business to businesses or business in that sort of business to business context has always been about people, and that people do business with people that they like.
Yeah.
And therefore it's all about trust and about credibility and about those things about making a promise and delivering against it and all those different sort of things. So I guess it's like, pull your socks up, pull yourself into the 21st century, use a lot, think about your customers a lot more, think about all the digital platforms and tools and information and enablement that can allow you to sort of almost like not reinvent, but renovate that whole distinction around people do business with people that they like. And it's like, how can you use all the new technology, new tools and new competitive pressures to actually create a 21st century version of that type of relationship? Would that be fair?
It would definitely be fair. And I think this is the problem that that a lot of B2B companies do have. As you say, you know, B2B markets have always been served by people, salespeople, service, delivery people, technicians. They've all got a relationship with the B2B customer and crucial,
yeah.
You know, crucial for delivering that customer experience. So, you know, in terms of, So it starts with a HR policy, and it's not just a question of training people. It's about recruiting the right people, orientated people in the first instance. Southwest Airlines is a client of ours,
mm-hmm.
and they were dealt with out of our American offices. But I know that some of the feedback when we were developing their new brand and speaking to their customers, it was the stories that we come back were amazing, and they don't recruit anyone if you've worked for another airline. You know, that they talk about it's got to be ingrained within the person itself, and so they don't look for another air hostess, they look at hairdressers, because it's all about being able to communicate with people.
Sure.
So it starts with people, but I think it's and this is the chasm or the divide that people are struggling to get over in a lot of B2B companies,
mm-hmm.
Is this digital ability or using technology to deliver this experience. There's a few. I mean, I think there was a piece of research by Google that showed that 71% of B2B buyers use the internet to search for information, you know, prior to contacting the supplier.
Yeah.
And you know, we all know that in a consumer space, but this ZMOT or zero moment of truth, B2B customers need to tune into this whole omnichannel piece of being able to understand, make sure that we're easy to do business with, we deliver that information that people are looking for up front.
Yeah.
And then from that, you know, being able to therefore deliver something differently. And I think this is where, you know, some merchants, you know, one of our global clients supplying tools and equipment has embraced this, mm-hmm. this omnichannel piece and being able to communicate and sell. But, you know, at the moment, I think it was Forrester, but there was a report recently that I read on that it's about 10% of B2B sales. I think this is just in the US is via via e-commerce.
Right.
I think that's what this was in 2017, but it's growing.
Yes.
And you know, you compare this to B2C retailers, that's a small part.
Yes.
So the B2B e-commerce world, it's not very sophisticated, yes. Lacks the IT nous, but they're living on a lot of antiquated systems.
Yeah.
B2B companies and this is often a message I feed back to boards of companies, you know, that you better take this seriously, because we've seen this digital disruptors in consumer marketplaces and in fact we're even seeing it, aren't we, with Amazon Business coming our way. So B2B companies, this is the biggest failing, because it is a big investment to start to move down that digital tech route.
Yeah. I think you talked about the zero moment of truth as well, and it's something I've been talking about, something similar for years now. It based on that idea of, we do research before we get in touch with people, and understanding that, and therefore companies have got a clue into this idea of, like, how do you establish trust at a distance?
Yeah.
And people just, and I've just seen many people, they start along this idea, but then they just kind of stumble because it's hard, it requires kind of a long time frame investment, because it's, you know, it's a big effort, and they actually can't quite get their heads around it. The idea, like, what does it mean to establish trust at a distance?
Yeah.
And a lot of that's about content, whether it's written or video or audio or whatever it might be, and it's just different.
It's a new way of thinking, isn't it?
Completely. Yeah. And many of the consumer brands have already gone through it. And I think business to business is still to get there. And it's the challenges. They might think, oh, but our business is not that interesting. Why would people want to read the stuff that we write about ourselves or sort of what we do? You're like going, well, people are searching for stuff that you do. And therefore, your challenge is to make it interesting.
Yeah. It's that age-old adage, isn't it, of content is king. And But we've got different ways that we can distribute that now.
Exactly.
And like you say, video and online as well as offline too.
So, Nick, we could probably chunter on about this sort of stuff for ages. But I know you're a busy guy. And I just wanted to say, so we talked about different things, and that's all of that sort of stuff is the stuff that you touch on in the book. I mean, is there anything that we sort of haven't touched on around this sort of this subject that we haven't touched on that you'd like to kind of point out or highlight before I ask you kind of my final question?
I suppose, I mean, I think we've covered a lot of the key points, actually, Adrian. I suppose emotions are talked about a lot these days. And, you know, the fact that, you know, B2B buyers, B2B decision makers are also consumers.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't leave our emotions at home when we go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the reason so many B2B companies fail to deliver just acceptable customer experiences. It's because they believe their customers are just different from those who do shop in the high street or, you know, online on Amazon.
Sure.
And yes, B2B customers, the B2B decision makers, they are different, but just like their consumer counterparts, they are driven by emotions. So mm-hmm. I think we've talked a lot, haven't we, about making sure we deliver against the basics, the product, the service quality, deliveries are on time.
Yeah.
And I think this is, you've got to make sure you do that. And in fact, most companies do, you know, otherwise they'd be quickly going out of business.
Sure.
So it's about getting the internal employees on board. And then, because they are the people that deliver these wow factors or help customers along the way. And mm-hmm. it's these little things that can mean a lot.
Sure.
And make that difference. And I think, you know, these delights need not be much. Good customer experience is built up by these small spoonfuls, if you like, of different unexpected delights.
Yeah, it could also just be that you end up being brilliant at the basics.
Yeah.
And it's not actually anything out of the ordinary or extraordinary or anything additional, but it could just be that actually, you know what, you just make it really easy for me and you answer my questions before they're even in my head.
Well, you know, it's exactly that. I mean, I think in the first introductory chapter, we say, you know, you've just got to be more like McDonald's. Yeah. They're not delivering lots of wows or anything like that, but they are very good at delivering against those basics, and they have started to listen to the customer and you know, how you can, you know, pre-order on a screen now when you go in and, you know, making things easy. It isn't all about doing amazing things that are massively different. Like you say, it's about delivering and being very good at delivering those basics.
Perfect. So
I think I was just going to say it isn't a quick win.
No.
You know, with the case study I talked about, it's working with a company for 7-8 years. They probably saw traction. They see the quick wins quickly, of course.
Yeah.
But in terms of big bottom line success, it probably starts to come through after about 3 to 4 years. And I think it's key. The key is that it is a never ending journey. You know, it's forever changing. We're in an evolving marketplace. Your competitors are doing different things. There's new competitors coming in to the marketplace. So it's making sure that it's not just this thing of the moment because people are talking about it.
Yeah,
it's a constant strategic agenda that should be on the board of all companies.
Perfect. Thank you. So, Nick, that brings me to my final question that I always ask at the end of these interviews, and we are north of 260 of them now over the last kind of few years. And the question is this. So is there anything that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Well, we're talking on the back of, you know, we met a few years ago, Adrian, but we're also talking on the back of the fact that the book launch, but we've already talked about that up front. So, you know, B2B customer experience, this practical guide, that's why we're talking today. I think, and I've mentioned this as we've gone through, but the shameless plug is that if you want to speak to a B2B specialist, a B2B expert that knows your marketplace, no matter what industry vertical, then B2B International, of which I'm a director, that's where all this experience from the book is fed from. And us as a team, a global team, you know, we're there to help you understand your customers, deliver that excellent customer experience. But on the back of that, you know, there's you might be wanting to take a product to market, you might be wanting to redevelop your brand. We can help you because we know it all links into that whole B2B customer experience.
Perfect. Nick, I shall make sure that I get that all kind of edited up and linked up and give you a big give the book a big shout out. So the B2B customer experience, plus also what the work that you do at B2B International. But just what also on the back of our chat today, I just want to thank you for your sharing your time and your insights, and congratulations on the book. That's been great.
Not at all, Adrian. I think it's I've enjoyed the chat for starters. Thank you for reaching out and doing this because I think any PR and marketing helps, and it's, you know, it's different avenues to take it on, and there's a definite link in terms of your interests and our interests, and I hope that we can continue to speak. We're linked in on Skype, aunt we, and our paths will no doubt cross at another conference sooner or later, but yeah, let's stay in touch.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adriansmusko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.